Y'all are so cute. I just, for people who cannot see them right now, the guests that I have are we're about to talk about love and witchcraft, and they just scooted closer to each other. So that's who they are fundamentally, and you'll find out who soon. Okay. Hello, beloved listeners. This is Adrienne, writer of stories and songs, witchy witch, immersion strategist, and pleasure activist, living in the land of the Shikori, Skarure, Tuscarora, Eno, Lumbee, and probably even more other peoples that are here in this place, which is also the home of my guest today. And we are here for How to Survive the End of the World, which is our podcast about learning from apocalypse with grace, rigor, and curiosity. When I say our, I'm shouting out my beautiful sister, Autumn, who's currently on sabbatical. In her absence, and in honor of my book, Fables and Spells, I'm going full witch this season and just having conversations with my favorite witches and teachers, and then reading you bits and pieces from the book. Now, when I say witch, I mean people who work with elements of the natural world, including our human nature, to generate more possibilities. And we're doing this podcast with still no sponsors, no ads, no funders, just you all as our supporters, our beloveds. So if you're not a member of our Patreon yet, you can slide on over. You can start anytime. We have exclusive content there. We have conversations that Autumn and I have about roaches and love. It's really exciting. So today I am so geeked out about my guests. These are two people who I look up to, I have learned from for basically my entire adult life, and I have followed around the world and now get to be neighbors with and play games with and continuously learn from, attend church that where they're preaching. I do all the things. So my guests today are one of our great Black love stories of this time, Alexis Pauline Gums and Shangodari Wallace. And hi, my loves.
Hi.
We're y'all so look so precious.
You look so precious.
You're so precious.
I'm looking forward to this.
I'm really excited about this. I think that y'all are going to be the only couple that I interview in this way in this season. But part of it is because for those of my listeners who are like, wait, tell me everything about these people. Alexis is a writer. Alexis has been on the podcast several times before, is a poet, is right now has just finished this incredible new biography of Audre Lorde, which we're all like eagerly wagging our tails and waiting for. And Alexis is always creating sacred spaces and learning spaces for people to write and feel together, to lean into Black feminist space together. And y'all are going to tell me the love story, but 11 years ago, Alexis fell in love with Shangodari. And Shangodari is like the quiet storm who I've always been like, oh, Shangodari is like shy, and like they're doing their mobile homecoming projects together. And Shangodari is behind the camera helping make projects and film. And like, I was always like, oh, Shangodari, like literally quiet and solid and like steady. And then I got to go to church. Shangodari is secretly like the Southern pastor of your dreams.
All right. Oh, it's time for the percolator. Yeah. That might move on up a little higher and become a joyous feeling, yeah, like laughter or a physical feeling, like being in the flow. A feeling that makes us know we want more. Yeah. More of a good thing.
All of that is in this person who still then, you know, steps off the podium and is like quiet storm again. So beautiful. And the two of them, if you follow them online or if you've been a part of any of the projects, they're able to cast these spells together between the kind of work that they've both been drawn to, but then the way that they actually love each other becomes a constant spell of what is possible for Black love, what is possible for queer love, and what is possible for love that is generating new possibilities in the world. So aww. I'm a fan of your love story. And it's unique for me because there's a lot of people who are really loud about their love. And I'm like, you know, I don't really need all that. And I never feel that with y'all. With y'all, I always feel like this is so it feels so authentically celebratory, and it feels like you're literally crafting something in the world with your love. And so that's why I was like, I need to have y'all come on here and talk about the witching that is embodied in a love story like yours, and then the witching that happens because of your love. So that's what we're about to do. I want to start with, for both of you, how are you right now today? How are you feeling? How are you doing? How are you being?
This is Alexis. I'm good. I've been looking forward to this. I'm so excited that we've reached this moment. We are in the midst of a writing retreat in the Netherlands, a co-writing retreat, and it's exciting to be on an adventure together. Mm. It's been a really sweet day, like sweet random breakfast spot that you actually have to go through a furniture store to get to, you know, like all yep. sorts of adventures. And it feels like also getting to know another country and other cities is allowing us to also get to know each other and ourselves in a different way, which is always fun. So I'm feeling grateful, feeling a lot. Rotterdam is a city that was bombed into submission by Nazis. And we're actually on the site of where that happened.
Wow. And
so this is where our prayers for peace have been happening from in this period of time. And this morning, the miracle was that across from us, I just saw this one Palestinian flag flying out someone's window. And I was like, you know, that alignment mm-hmm. there, and that people here are in that prayer with us, even though we may not know them personally, that's visible mm-hmm. to us is a huge blessing.
That's really beautiful. Thank you for the prayers and for letting us share that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm feeling great. I feel like we're in a level up together uh-huh. and a growth spurt. And because we've created space for ourselves, I don't feel any growing pains. It's like growing joys is what it feels like. so that feels really good because we've done a lot of growing together. And there have been growing pains before. And it's like, oh, gosh, I think we figured out another way to grow.
Yeah.
I'm in the bliss of that right now.
Oh, that's wonderful. One of the last times I saw you was actually in Amsterdam, Shant Godari. And I love that the Netherlands has been, it feels like there's this sister city relationship or something opening up with that space. We'll see more about that soon. But so I'm using the language of witch for this season and for how, you know, it's like the larger umbrella of all these magical kinds of work and putting intention behind the kind of changes we're trying to make. And years ago, Alexis, I texted you or something. I was like, Alexis, I don't know if I'm a witch or a priestess. And could you just break it down? Like, tell me what you think I am as someone who, you know, Alexis and I have known each other since college. And at the time you were like, you know, you could be both. Like you come from many lineages and you don't necessarily have to choose between them. And I have leaned into all, you know, I feel like now I'm like witch, priestess, goddess, like just, you know, I'm like fluidly moving in between different sacred technologies for how I feel like I move my work. And I want to be really intentional as I ask you all this question. Do you think of witching as a way that you identify the work that you're doing, the sacred work that you're moving in the world?
I mean, I wouldn't say we'd use that language. Definitely conjuring, definitely magic,
priestly practice,
divineness, divination itself. I mean, all of those things are definitely a part of how we work. And I think that there's huge overlap, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
resonance.
Yeah.
Definitely resonance. Yeah, yeah. But I wanted to ask you how you are right now.
How am I? I'm like, oh, me. I'm away. You know, it's been a big week of sort of turning and being like, okay, every time there's a major crisis in the world, I take it so personally and I can't, it's not like I can't function, but it's like, I'm only designed to function in relationship to the crisis. Like it's so quick that everything else falls apart and I can kind of abandon my body, abandon myself and just be like, that now is the most important thing. And so I've been sitting this week with like, how do I hold both things being true, that that is the most important thing and that those are the most precious lives and my life is also a most precious life. And there's a balance in the dance. I've been really grateful because I've been building a friendship with Hala Alian, the Palestinian writer and poet. And the friendship has really been focused in like, okay, what does endurance look like when we're in long-term struggle? And this week I've been really holding that personally. Like, okay, you know, I'm doing the actions. I found a rhythm of action that's working for me. Can I endure? Can I sustain what I'm doing? And so this week I was like, I can, you know, in somatics, it's kind of like the teachers always used to say down and back, Adrian, like you're leaning forward and you're overextended and your chin is out, you know, you're really trying to reach towards all these people and put your energy elsewhere. Remember to drop down and back and into your center and let that be the place from which you act. So this feels like a really recentering week where, I feel a lot of pride about movements of people around the world and here in the US and how folks have really stepped up and been so loud. And I feel the humility also of, you know, there's so many of us that want the world to be different and we're still figuring out how we tie in with each other to make that happen. But I feel like this past 2 months has felt like, okay, we've learned a lot, actually. There's still so much more to learn about how we truly rein in the monstrous tendencies in the world. So that's how I am. I feel sort of humbled, landing back in my body, really feeling for my tailbone and really feeling my feet on the floor. I got to go visit with my babies, my sister and the babies, and that really was nurturing. Like I needed to have them, they do this thing where they kind of just surround me on the couch and it's like, we're watching something, but I'm like, I don't even know what we're watching. I'm just like so happy that I can feel each of them. Their hair is all around me. I'm in the cloud of it. So that was like the highlight of my week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you for asking.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Well, and even that, I'm like, I've needed help. I'm like, I need help to even move through conversations. I'm like, I'm not a leader in this moment. I feel very like in the flow and in relationship right now too. And that's been helpful. And I feel witchy. Like I have been leaning on my witchy practices too. I have something is clicking for me where I'm like, oh, if I don't lean on my witchy practices, then I lean on sugar or I lean on like pizza or I lean on something where I'm like, this hurts. This is not actually making things better. And then if I lean on the witchy practice, like last night, you know, the poet Rifat Alamir, who was killed, he wrote this poem, If I Must Die. And I was like, what if I just sing this? What if I just sing the poem for myself, just sing it and really feel like let myself feel it with my whole self. And that's a spell, you know, he cast a very clear spell with that poem and it's instructive. And I'm like, okay, can my voice be a kite? Can my voice be something that can float, that can be an angel, that can, you know, like it was really just like leaning in and being like, how can I partner and then carry on? I'm like, I must live. He says, if I must die, then you must live. And I'm like, okay, that's how do I be in that? So yeah, that practice. Life is practice.
Practice.
Yeah. So I'm witching out. But so yeah, so that's where we were. So y'all are like, we're divine. We know we're practicing divinity. Yeah. And there's a lot of overlap with this language of witchiness. I accept that. I love that.
I mean, and the whole fact of our relationship is a deep conjure.
That's what I wanted to ask you all. It's sort of like, how much do you feel like you conjured each other before you met each other? how much do you feel like in the meeting and falling in love, it was a conjuring? And how much do you feel like conjuring is a part of your ongoing relationship and deepening in practice?
Yeah. Well, I definitely feel like that I manifested Alexis. You know, I had a list for a while. I started my list in college. Mm. And I was in a long-term relationship, so mostly didn't mess with it. but when that relationship, I know, when that relationship ended, though, I did
speak on that. Yes.
Right. I did start tweaking it and refining it. Mm. At some point, I sent an email out to my friends and community letting them know, you know, I'm ready for a serious, a long-term committed relationship. But I feel like one of the major conjures was I would take myself on journeys, like self-guided journeys on dates with this person, like down to the detail. Like I knock on the door, and she opens it, and she's wearing this and I'm wearing that. And then this is what she says, like just going through every single detail. And at some point I was like, okay, I'm going on these dates and I don't know the person's name. This is weird. So what's the name? And I didn't want to choose a name. So I was just kind of like, okay, what is it? It was like Pauline. Okay. So me and Pauline are going on the date and I open the door and she walked and all this. So we're having this relationship.
Oh, I'm gobsmacked already.
We're having this relationship, you know, in my mind, in my energy. And then I was like, okay, well, how do I need to grow to like really be ready for and worthy of this amazing person? So like that was a part of the journey. And then I would just try to be everywhere I thought she would be at. So
Where's Pauline today?
Exactly. Community events or, you know, parties or whatever. And I had a practice of as soon as I noticed that somebody I was engaging wasn't Pauline, I would stop engaging them. So I had a lot of short dates. Hopefully not rude. It's like, oh, no.
I love it. Actually, I'm sorry, babe. This is a really nice dinner, but you're not Pauline, so I'm gonna have to see my way out of here. Yeah, you're nice. Yeah. You're cute. No offense. You're just not Pauline. Okay. So I love that for all those people.
She emerged. Yeah, she emerged, and we had some, you know, mixed signals in the beginning. So it took maybe 3 or 4 times of being in the same place before we actually went on a date. But we did go on a date. 2008.
Did you know her middle name was Pauline when you went on the date? By the time you went on the date?
Mm-hmm. No. Wow. You want to tell the story of the near misses?
I mean, we don't got to go into all of it. into all of it. But it was...
We've healed, baby.
I remember, I mean, one memorable thing about our first date, there are a lot of memorable things because it was also epic. Like,
you know, I want to hear it. It sounds very queer. Yeah.
But I was like, what is it that you did? You should go to the Allied Media Conference. I remember that was like one of the first things that we said. And I remember that moment when you were like, oh, your middle name is Pauline. And you had this like interest. And I didn't know about the whole visualization and the conjure. And I didn't even understand it. Like, I think you tried to explain it to me and I was like.
Yeah. And in a not. Freaking it freak you out.
You crazy. Whatever. Okay.
Yeah. I was like, I think you once had an imaginary friend named Pauline. I don't know. It wasn't until later that I really got that, like, oh no, you conjured me into your life. And I feel like, I mean, we have made this joke that I'm like, if this is a spell, like if you're putting something in my water, just keep doing it.
Yeah, I like it.
Because I love it. I guess what ultimately was a complimentary place, but it was a completely different place. Uh-huh. I had come out of a relationship, really difficult end of a relationship. I had really damaged my trust in myself because I wasn't allowing myself. It was like, I could see what was going on with this person, but I didn't want to believe it. And so I was like ignoring my intuition. And
I know.
Like that relationship with the intuition is, it's a sacred relationship, right? Yeah. So when I met Shango Dare, I was at the place where I had to grow my trust in myself back. And it was like the most amazing thing for basically Shango Dari to understand, like, I know who this is because I actually already know.
I got what I ordered. What?
check.
Yeah, so Shango Dari is like, so, you know, we went on a date. How many dates till we're dating? And how long dating till we're going steady? And how much steady till we're
a couple,
you know? And every mm-hmm. single point of that, I checked in with myself. And even though my mind was like, you had this terrible experience, like, you should guard your heart, you should protect yourself, you should. Every time I actually checked in with myself and my divine intuition, it was like, yes, 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 you know, and like really trusting what I felt was the healing, you know, the healing that I needed in my relationship to that aspect of us that always knows the truth, right? That fear can get in the way of it, but it's there for us if we can listen. And so I feel like that was the magic on my end of saying yes and trusting. And because the logical part of myself was like, girl, you need at least a few years to heal from what you've been through.
Right.
And my spirit was like, no, you need this person to heal through what you've been through. Like, this is the journey that you're supposed to be on. This is the most nourishing, healing path for you.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. You know, whatever y'all conjured is so, so massive, and so it feels so right as like someone outside of the relationship watching it, that it obliterates whatever came before. So the idea to me that either of you was ever with anyone else is always so funny. Like, I'm like, what? You weren't just like born in houses next door to each other, and you just always knew, like, it's always us. And right. So it's so, you know, I think that there's something really beautiful about that, even though I'm like, I know that whatever came before shaped you into the people who would meet each other. But every time you suggest that there was something else, it's like, what? Or that 2008, I'm like, no. It was clearly like not in this century that we found each other. So that brings me to this question of lineage. So with a lot of the witches, I ask, who would you consider to be in the lineage of your practices? And I wonder if you have ancestors or folks that you call on that feel like this is who's in the lineage of our love crafting.
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, the idea of loveship, that we understand ourselves to be in loveship and in support of loveship,
yeah,
comes from some of our elders, actually, who are divine spiritual beings. Our godmother in the Yoruba tradition, Ifalade Tishia Asante, and also the great Ianifa Queen,
Hollins.
Queen Hollins, who created the Earth Lodge Center in Long Beach. They would talk about our relationship as a love ship, and their understanding and their relationships, you know, like their people in long relationships, loving relationships that we've been able to watch and actually, you know, partner all together, to laugh together, but also to create together and to uplift together. I see them as our elders in that. I mean, I would say also, honestly, because one of the first things that we did as a love ship was the mobile homecoming project, and we went and interviewed all these elders. They all had relationship advice for us, you know, the people who were couples that we actually honored and interviewed together, but also the people who just wanted us to know. They were like, look, I have a one that got away, and this is what I learned, and don't let what happened to me happen to you. You know, like all of these incredible offerings, you know, that I feel like are actually part of our toolkit and our resilience bag of magic.
Yeah. I would add to that Alexis's Uncle Dwayne and Aunt Carol. Because I mean, I had the fortunate and also scary experience of going to family functions with Alexis and her Uncle Dwayne pulling me aside and being like, you know, so, you know, when are y'all gonna make this official? You need to have a ceremony or something with other people there, whatever you do, whatever you call it. And he did that a couple of times. And, you know, this Caribbean straight black man doing that just felt so loving. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, I've had such traumatic experiences dating people whose family members didn't approve. And it just felt very loving. And then we did have a ceremony. Mm-hmm. He was there. Uncle Dwayne and Aunt Carol were there. But then even after that, inviting us into space to develop more tools for our relationship in specific and tangible ways has really been very supportive. And just to have this wonderfully, you know, rich queer community, but also to have familial community that, you know, supports your relationship, you know, specifically, not generally, like specifically supports your relationship, is really been powerful as well.
And I feel blessed by our mentors who also create together. You know, I mean, Uncle Dwayne and Aunt Carol actually do create together, and they create community in a really powerful way. Mm-hmm. But I'm also thinking about Sharon Bridgeforth and Omi Oshun Joni L. Jones, and how they love each other and how they support each other to be creative beings. And I think about Alexis DeVoe and Sakari Ekiri, you know, how they understand that their love is a space of creative practice. And I feel just really grateful that we can look and see that and not feel like it's something that we're inventing, even though we're inventing our version of it, of course. It's also wonderful to have that chosen family and support.
Mm-hmm. I love it. It feels like a thickness. Like thickness of lineage, thickness of people who have like laid foundation and laid ground. And like, I keep thinking of soil being ready, like what it takes for soil to be ready, and how each of these love stories we hear is part of like readying the soil for our own love, you know, our own love possibilities. So now I want to ask you a bit about practice. You know, I think that there's always like what a relationship looks like from outside. And then there's what you're actually practicing internally that's not intentional. And then there's what you're practicing that is intentional. And I feel like with love stories that last a long time, either you get into highly functional practices that are intentional early on, or you kind of settle for like, I just love you, so it's just going to be what it is, you know. And either one works. You know, I feel like I know people who've been in long relationships going, you know, very intentionally or very unintentionally. And I think that's the main thing I wanted to ask y'all about is, from outside, what I see as practices you're in, I see a ton of celebration of each other, almost at the level of worship, that you're like, I see and worship this person, and I want to share that worship with all of you. I want you all to see this person the way I see them, and to know what you know, like I think of like the grandmother, I need you to know what Jesus did for me today, right? And I feel like y'all have that energy. Like, let me tell you what Alexis did today. Let me tell you what Shango Dari did today. And it feels like a very present celebratory energy that feels very intentional. And then I feel like the co-creation, that like when you're thinking of something, you're like, okay, Shango Dari is about to launch this collaborative app for all of us. And Alexis is right there being like, okay, here I am. I'm collaborating with you. I'm supporting you. And then the same thing, it's like, okay, Alexis is moving this project, this book into the world, and Shango Dari is right there. So I see those things. And then I just see like home and like nesting and this idea of like wherever we are, we create this nest of love together. So those are some things I want to reflect back to you, that like those emanate out into the world and they're really cool to see. Now I'm curious about like, what are you actually up to? Like, what are y'all intentionally practicing? What feel like maybe unintentional things that you're like, this just happens. I don't know how, but it's a good thing, you know. What's your love work?
Yeah, I really appreciate this question. And I think from here, looking back, what I notice is that practice is such a huge part of our relationship. And like, yes, there's attraction. Yes, there's affinity. Yes, there's you know, common grounds, like shared interests. But to me, I think one of the strongest threads is we have practice in common, like the types of things we like to practice. You know what I mean? So yes. there's something there that's really strong and firm on which we can build other things. If our practices were incompatible, I think we'd have to do a lot more work than what we're doing, because the practices that make our relationship so strong, I feel like, are things that we are excited to do. So yeah, it's work, but it's joyous work. It's play. But yeah, we do have a lot of practices.
We have a lot of practices. I mean, I think that it makes sense, because the way that we think, the intentionality with which we relate to each other, I think comes out of the idea that we understand our relationship to be something that our ancestors gifted us with towards us achieving our highest destiny, you know, for our whole community in our lifetimes, you know, like that's what it is. And so that's different than just like, you cute, you know? Or like, I just like want to be around someone and not have to be, or I just want partnership on the things that you have to do in life. All those things are great as well. But it's like in those moments where it's like, how do I choose how I'm going to relate to this person? It is spiritual practice.
Yeah.
You know, because this is an ancestrally gifted miracle of my life, right? So I relate to our relationship as spiritual practice, and we both do that. And it's a huge gift, because I think even our conversations, like I feel like just talking to Shango Dari is a form of prayer.
Yeah.
You know, like there's this clarity that can come through, and this truth of what my question even is, you know, like all of that is such a huge gift. And so we have a lot of practices. I mean, we have our individual morning time practices where we're praying and meditating and, you know, being with ourselves and checking in with ourselves and spending time with our ancestors and all of that. But we also have daily practices that we do, and we have mantras that we repeat. And for a certain season of our life, like this is what we're calling in, and this is the energy that we're actively deciding to be in. And we create those mantras together, and we have a set of things, like we read a sacred text together. These practices that are growing edges for us, we support each other around. Like we have a forgiveness practice. Like, who do I need to forgive between yesterday when we did this and today? Often it's myself that I need to forgive. Sometimes it's each other that we're forgiving. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the rideshare driver who made us motion sick by driving recklessly. I mean, it could be anything, but forgiveness. And then I think request.
Mm-hmm.
Like what requests do we have of each other? Because I can say for myself that I have historically had a default mode of like, don't ask for anything. Don't want to seem needy, but then I'll resent people for not doing the things that I wish they would have done, but I never asked. So that's a practice, you know, in our loveship of like, we actually make requests of each other and challenge ourselves to make requests outside of our relationship.
You know,
and we dance.
Mm-hmm.
We have like a one song dance party every day.
Yeah. And we do testimony, gratitude, especially whatever came up in our own spirit time, testimony, gratitude, and health.
We always talk to each other about like, how's your health? How's your health right now?
Yeah.
Oh.
Those are the daily ones. And I wouldn't say we're like 100% on our like, full moon gratitude and new moon intention setting, but we generally pay attention to that cycles, and we try to especially do it on equinox and solstice and all of that. So
is it equally balanced? Like, do you feel like there's an equal balancing in the practices, or does it feel like one of you is a little bit more like, yeah, we need to do our practices today?
I think Alexis definitely is the one that, make sure that it happened. I really want it to happen.
Yes.
But I ate breakfast and I'm going to go back to work because I have that meeting that's going to start. And then baby, I want to do our spirit. You're like, oh, yes, baby. Or it's like, you know, I think that you're scheduled this, but don't you think at 7 o'clock instead, maybe we could, you know, so let's just really do a good job at that. And we even had to do some work around like celebrating that she gets to play that role and like me offering gratitude to her so that it wouldn't necessarily, you can say how you feel about it, but it wouldn't necessarily have to feel like a burden or like, oh, I don't want, Shangodari doesn't want to do it in it.
Right.
Like, no, like I'm so excited. And, you know, and I think one thing that really helps in terms of like accountability is putting things in time.
Yes.
It's like, you know, it's hard. It can be hard to manage something that you're both committed to if you don't literally carve out the space for it. So,
But yeah, I think that practice is everything, you know, like what we practice is what our life is, you know, and realizing that we do have all these spaces, like what we're creating, you know, like Mobile Homecoming or Black Feminist Film School, where we get to live into our values. But even if none of that is happening, we decide, we live a life where we play together, where we dance together, where we read sacred texts by Black feminists. Like, this is what we do together. And then we don't have to think about like, wow, when's the last time that we got to dance with each other? It's like, well, yesterday or this morning, or, you know, that, but I like this question about what are the things that are, that we didn't consciously create
in terms of practices?
There's so much intentionality.
Like, was there an intentional conversation about how you would share your love publicly?
Oh, no, not really.
No.
Good point.
Yeah, I mean, that's one, you know, I'm always so curious about that because I've had to do that with multiple people, is be like, you know, yes, you can share this, or no, you can't share this, or I don't want you to mention me publicly, or, you know, like, I've gotten very prickly about it as in my old age, you know, in my big years. And, it's rarely been something that was, I can't think of any serious relationship I've been in where it wasn't something that we had to like have a conversation around, you know, it's like, how are we going to show up? And I always get the feeling from y'all that you're just like, this is just what it is. Like, this is what it is. This is how I want to move.
Yeah. I feel like I was not engaging social media that much when we first started together. And I think our values and practices around social media probably firmed up together. So it was kind of organic. Like, we both have a relationship to social media where it's a space to amplify love and to amplify the energy that we want to be in the world. So yes, there are things that we are against, in quotes. But that's not the, you know, what you focus on grows, right?
That's
what
right.
Where you put your interest. Yeah. That's where you get the return on that. So I think that that's probably the foundation of how we relate. And so then everything just grows out of that. Now, it might be that, you know, she takes a picture and I feel like my face looks funny. And I'm like, oh, baby, why'd you put that? But beyond that.
You always look perfectly gorgeous to me.
Yeah.
Now, y'all are pretty photogenic. It's annoying. So I love that. I love that. And so now I want to think about how other people take on this love practice. And, you know, there are some people who are like, I want to manifest exactly that. Like, I want to manifest a holy, divine, collaborative, love, sweet partner who I just can't wait to worship and celebrate. I'm like, cool. So you need to do what Shangodari said, make a list, give that person the name, and like get to conjuring. Cool. But then there's people who are like, I don't know that that's going to be the way that I experience love in this lifetime, or it might be something else. But I still think there are practices about how you live and how you relate that are things that anyone could tune into. So that it's like, it might be how you are with your family or with your friends or with other people, but there's some stuff here about this love practice that are like what the world needs today. I love what you just said, Shangodari, that's like, we're amplifying love. Like, that's actually the intention of, you know, that's how I also feel with my use of social media is I'm like, I want to amplify the good. I want to amplify the best of us. And so I want to ask y'all, what skills from this love practice, and this, I keep coming back to love crafting, because I really love the idea of like reclaiming Lovecraft. What do you wish everyone was practicing in this apocalyptic time?
I would say for me, and that, I mean, it shows up in our love story, but I think it's really cultivating the relationship with our own sacred yes. And I think that's something that I want for everyone. Has been the biggest blessing in my life. Like, what do I really want? And how can I trust that to guide me when, you know, maybe the world's saying it's impossible. Maybe my own past experiences have me terrified of it. Maybe even people who love me are trying to protect me from how much I'm going to have to grow to experience that. Whether it's a yes that's about love or partnership, or whether it's a yes about like, I really want to write about marine mammals, or you know what, like whatever. That's my wish for everyone, is to have that for themselves. Like, their relationship with that is so solid, because, and it's a daily practice for me of checking in with that, right? Mm-hmm. That is such a powerful relationship that they trust it. And so whether they're making decisions around who they spend their time with, or if they're going to be in a committed partnership, or what they're going to spend their time in their art practice about, or who they're going to organize within movement, you know, all of those things, that they're not reacting to a set of stimuli that they're just trying to figure out in their brain, but that they really can trust a deep yes for themselves. And yeah, it is a practice. It does take practice. And I would say that my daily practice in the morning, which includes looking myself in the eye in the mirror, which includes writing and singing and dancing, and you know, all of that is feeling for that, the yes of this day, and reminding that aspect of myself that yes, I'm listening, and I'm ready to be guided, and I'm ready again today to live from that place that is not about figuring it all out in my mind, but is about trusting that I'm part of the universe's process of creating. And I can feel when that's what's happening, and I can also feel when that's not what's happening.
Ooh. Yes, Ashe.
I think mine is what I used to call pre-forgiveness, but somebody reflected it back to me as forward forgiveness. And I was like, oh, that does sound better. The alliteration's nice. Anyway, so forward forgiveness. You could also call it non-judgment, but if you say non-judgment, then you're talking about judgment and not forgiveness. And what it is really is just love. And it's a way that I practice love. So like, for example, I'm so grateful for Alexis, so in love. And, you know, there might've been a time where Alexis would get the honey jar just sticky. So every time I'm going to get the honey jar is sticky. And Alexis. And so I said, well, let me work on this. Like, this should not be something that's upsetting me as I'm trying to make tea. Like, I love her so much. And so
I like this. Let me get a squeeze bottle.
And so it's like, oh, okay. This is how I can relate is when it, so one, I can expect that it will be sticky or not. I'm surprised. Yeah. Oh, there she, my baby just get honey everywhere. She's so sweet. Let's just rinse this off. Like, you know, so generating the forgiveness before it happens. Because really the truth is that whoever she's being, whatever she's doing, it's for me. And even in upset, I can love this person. I can stand where she is as who she is, loving her and figuring out how to support her through whatever this upset is. Like, there's nothing that she's doing to me, you know what I mean? That's bad or that's harmful. And to me, walking around in the world with that relationship to her, but with everybody, it's just so giving. It, not to say that, you know, I don't have my emotions or my triggers, but I have something to lean on. And I really feel like that creates a beautiful, peaceful, wonderful life for me. Like, I have the choice. And I also have the choice to know that there's certain spaces where I have less access to that. Mm-hmm. I don't go to those spaces. I don't want to go be around a whole bunch of straight people at a party. I don't have as much access to my forgiveness, you know? And so I thought that that's something that people should, you know, really try and try it where it's easiest and let it grow and let it expand. I feel like it's had positive effect in my family relationships with my friends. And then even understanding that, well, if I'm so triggered by certain relationships, there's some work I need to do.
Right.
I need to step back and do that work so I can have access to the love, which is really what all there is. And if I'm not experiencing that, there's something I need to be working on with me.
Mm-hmm. I love all of that. That feels like such generous and clear, practicable, actionable teaching. And the thing I've been landing on, the last question I've been like asking people is, you know, we're living in a world where we are not fully healed and things still happen. Things are still unfolding. I love that both of y'all said, we're still growing. We're still growing. And we're still getting to know each other, which is also so cool to me because I'm like, what? Like, you're together all the time. You go everywhere together. Like, what else? How can you not know everything? But I'm like, of course, because you're two different people and you're still learning each other. And we're still healing, right? We're like healing the larger patterns of the world in our lives. So any guidance you have on how you offer your love and how you offer your craft and how you offer your conjuring and your magic to the world while still healing?
Sweetness. Sweetness, really, I tell you, it's magic. Because if you're upset with somebody and you humble yourself and come to them with sweetness, even in your upset, even in your story, it creates so much space for them to respond to you in sweetness as well. And then you all have more access to addressing whatever it is. I feel like the most upset we have, or I put like arguments in square quotes, are around things like, well, I was trying to do this for you when you did me, but you wouldn't tell me what you wanted. It's like that kind of stuff. We can allow ourselves to tell the truth and to say what has come up or how we've been triggered, and it not be something, you know, really negative, because we're doing it in sweetness, you know. I really challenge and encourage people to do that. Like, even make a ceremony, you know, blow bubbles and tell the person why you're mad. Like, whatever it is you can do to activate that energy of sweetness, the person doesn't turn on that fight or flight thing. That's that right. Activates. And you just have so much more access to love and peace.
I think that's right. I think, you know, we are healing, and there's something that's so beautiful about that. You know, I think that understanding that, and this was the major thing that I had to understand. Like, it's not like, okay, Alexis, you got to be fully healed.
Yeah.
And then you can try to love somebody again, you know, like that, that's not actually how it works. We are healing each other. Right. And we're, as I'm seeking love in this relationship, but also just seeking love in the world as a participant in this transformation we're in on the planet, I'm seeking love, seeking my healing. It's the same seeking. And how amazing that is. And I think that it for us, it changes the framework, because it's like, you know, so there's a part of me that needs to be healed around this, you know, and whether it's like, oh, wow. You know how partners, we remind each other of our parents and we got stuff that we need to heal from our child relationships. And it's like, I actually have an opportunity to heal it.
Yes.
You know, like this is actually the space, and we're ongoingly creating it as a safe space. And to me, that's why the sacred practices, because the things that we do are part of it, but the things that we don't do are also part of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We are not screaming at each other. That is not like, this is a gift from the ancestors. Absolutely, it's a disrespect to all my ancestors to be just screaming on somebody like that. In general, actually, everyone's a gift from my ancestors. Anyway, but that's part of what makes it a safe space, right? That like, we're going to work through whatever it is. We're not going to actively punish each other or do something that's trying to harm the other person. And that means it's a safe space to heal.
That's right.
And to be vulnerable and to be like, you know what? The 3-year-old me is showing up right now, mm-hmm. you know, and it can be hard because it's like, you know, I think there are moments where I've been like, could that just stay shut away? Like, could I not have to feel and remember and be called to heal around this area? Cause it's like, mm-hmm. it can be growing pains, mm-hmm. right? But it's actually a lot less painful when there's this sweet person who's like, I love the 3-year-old version of you with your face covered in snot. Cause you're like, ah, you know, like this feeling is so hard and it's connected to so many hard things, not just in my life, but on this planet. And, you know, like all of that is real. And if we could understand that all of our relationships have the capacity to be healing relationships, if we let them be that, right? And if we create the container and the safety for that, then it also releases the burden of having to pretend like I'm already fully healed to be worthy, to be in relationship with anyone, even as a friend, even as a collaborator in movement. Like I don't presuppose these other people are healed when they get to me, you know, like, why would I presuppose that?
Yeah.
It is a forward forgiveness. Like, I will be disappointed every time if I ask people to relate to me as if they're not human. And, yeah. But if I'm doing that, it's because I'm asking that of myself.
That's right. You know?
So
I love that.
Yeah. I think that the fact that we're still healing is the reason that we all need each other.
Yeah.
And that we must be in relationship, and the different forms of relationship that we have, that's where it happens.
Yeah. It's such a paradigm shift to relinquish perfection and relinquish the idea of dominating the wound, or dominating what hurt us or whatever. And instead feeling like the healing is the victory. The healing is the practice. The healing is what it is to be alive, is healing everything you can in yourself and your relationships. And I love this idea of forward forgiveness to yourself. I'm like, of course, self. Oh, you're such a human with your little sticky honey hands, you know, like, okay, here we are. I'm really grateful for this time with you all. And I've been ending it with a poem out of Fables and Spells, but because y'all are who you are, I wondered if you would share with us a spell or a poem, a piece of, spell casting that feels connected to your love ship or something that you guys regularly come home to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we have this, the beginning of The Creative Spirit by June Jordan, which is a talk that she gave about children's literature in 1977. At a conference about children's literature at Berkeley. It's also, we published it in Revolutionary Mothering, Love on the Front Lines, because it's so central to how we think about what mothering is in its most expansive sense. But we come back to it all the time in terms of what love even means. And we actually, on this writing retreat, separately realized that we both were using it as a prompt without even coordinating.
Thank you guys so much.
We're like, wait. Me too. So June Jordan is showing up for us. And
yes,
I think it makes sense to share from that.
Please.
Yeah. Yeah. You wanna go first whenever you stop off the cut?
Okay. Okay. The Creative Spirit, Children's Literature. Love is life force. I believe that the creative spirit is nothing less than love made manifest. I see love as the essential nature of all that supports life. Love is opposed to the death of the dream. Love is opposed to the delimiting of possibilities of experience. When we run on love, when we move and change and build and paint and sing and write and foster the maximal fulfillment of our lives, as well as the maximal fulfillment of other lives that look to us for help, for protection, or for usable clues to the positive excitement of just being alive. Then,
we make manifest the creative spirit of the universe, a spirit existing within each of us, and yet persisting infinitely greater than the ultimate capacities of any one of us.
Mm-hmm. Hallelujah. Ashe. And so
thank you, June Jordan.
Thank you, June Jordan. I just feel like June Jordan needs a million praises every day.
Yes.
Yeah. And love. I feel like the being in a lineage of love is such a gift. You know, when you talk about the ancestors gave you this gift, it's like the ancestors held on to love through everything.
Yes.
They kept honing, here's how we do it in this condition, and here's how we do it in this condition. And now I look at you all and I feel like you're just teaching us, here's how we love at the end of the world, this world to the next, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So thank you so much. Y'all are hope giving, your teachers. I really do bow down and I can't believe I get to be in community with you. I love you so much. I'm really just like, okay, I don't even remember how I was at the beginning of the call. I just feel like I'm like 3,000 feet tall now.
Shake these bones, shake these bones, oh, we're gonna shake these bones, shake these bones, oh, we're gonna shake these bones, shake these bones, oh, we're gonna shake these bones.
Thank you all. Be safe, travel well. I love you so much. Thank you everyone who tuned in to listen to this Love Fest. We're grateful to everyone for giving their time and energy to this show. You can find us on Instagram at IntoTheWorldPC. Make a sustaining donation at patreon.com/IntoTheWorldShow. Write a review on Apple Podcasts, or really, you can just write reviews anywhere. That I would be happy about it. And How to Survive the End of the World is produced and edited by the dreamy Zach Rosen, also a great love story. Music for today's show comes from Tunde Alanaran, Mother Cyborg, and the Bing Sons. Love, love, love. Cast a spell.